Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Good morning, everyone. I hope you're having a lovely day today. I am delighted to have my friend, Dr. Huntington Potter, here today with me. And he is with the University of Colorado Alzheimer's Research and Memories Disorders Clinic. And you're the vice chair of the unit, right?
Director of the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center, which we started at the University of Colorado about 4 or 5 years ago. It's growing by leaps and bounds.
It sure is, isn't it? And what a great clinic you have over there.
Well, thank you.
So many people are just discovering the University of Colorado's Memory Clinic and the Movement Disorders Clinic as well. So it's great to be spreading that word and letting people know. We had you on the show in March, and we were talking about your Leukine trial. And I'm going to ask you about that later today. But what I really wanted to talk to you today is about more of the details surrounding your clinic, okay? And some of the things that are important to you and the work that you do there and all of your clinicians. And some of that is talking about who is eligible to come over to your clinic and how do they work through that process? Do they just call it in advance? Can they just walk in? I wouldn't think that would be the case. So let's clarify that for our listeners, okay?
Sure. So the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center has a memory disorders clinic at the University of Colorado Hospital, and we have a website, and on the website is a telephone number that you can call to make an appointment for the clinic. When that call is completed and you have an appointment, mm-hmm. then any of your medical records should be passed on. But essentially, a real expert neurologist with knowledge about Alzheimer's disease and all other kinds of memory problems will be able to assess the patient as to what they actually have. It may be they have Alzheimer's disease if they have a serious memory problem, but maybe they have something else, and some of those are more treatable than Alzheimer's disease.
Right. And I try to make sure that all my listeners out there in Caregiver Nation are very educated. So we talk a lot about dementia and what it is. And it is actually a definition of cognitive impairment that's serious enough to affect your activities of daily living, right? But there are some dementias that are reversible, the ones that are not diseases. And we need to figure that out for people. We want to make sure that people are not coming over to your clinic thinking they might have Alzheimer's when really maybe they just took a medication that made them a little foggy, and if they quit taking that medication, they'd feel better, or they have a vitamin B12 deficiency or something like that, right?
That's absolutely right, yes, Jill.
So what we want to do is make sure that they get a diagnosis, maybe a neurobehavioral exam, before they come over, because you need to know, are they early in this disease? Do they have mild cognitive impairment where only they know they're having problems? Or are they in late stage in this disease? And your clinic has to have somebody at a certain level before they begin, right?
So we're willing to assess subjects who are merely worried about their memory, or maybe their family recognizes something before the subject themselves do. And as Dr. Jonathan Woodcock has often said, he's the head of the Memory Disorders Clinic, he's cured more people of Alzheimer's disease by taking them off drugs than giving them drugs.
Right.
So it is important to know what's going on upstairs, and he and his colleagues are the ones to do that.
Okay. So the mild cognitive impairment piece, is it helpful if they come in the early stages?
Well, the reason that it's helpful to get a good assessment from an expert in the early stages of any kind of dementing illness is that we can start the drugs that are available a little bit earlier. That's always good. And we can assess exactly what's going on a little bit earlier. Now, as we develop new drugs in the laboratory, in the clinic, and eventually get them FDA approved, those will be most likely effective at the earliest stages of the disease.
Right. And that's great. I had a caller, Dr. Potter, who asked me just this week. So if you don't mind answering this if you can. She was asking if there's a blood test that you can take to get this diagnosis. And as far as I have known, so I need you to clarify for me, someone has to be in a clinical trial. We don't want to just go around giving blood tests and telling people they have Alzheimer's or what have you.
You're absolutely right.
Right?
There
so,
are no approved blood tests to tell whether somebody has Alzheimer's or not.
Okay.
If a person volunteers and is accepted into any kind of clinical research on Alzheimer's disease or a related disorder, we may ask them to donate a little bit of their blood, and we may look for biomarkers in that blood. But so far, none are really ready for public consumption. They're research studies only.
Okay. And there's a good reason for that. A lot of times I think people go to the doctor, and the doctor may say, well, you've got some type of dementia. And out there in the world, people really don't have enough knowledge to ask, what does that mean or what kind? A lot of times it gets a blurry line between Alzheimer's and so forth. But especially if you have this in your family, it's not a great idea to just worry that you have a little memory loss and then have somebody just flat out tell you that you have some type of dementia or Alzheimer's. For me, I could know if I had a gene mutation from my mom, and that biomarker. But there's a big responsibility that comes with learning that news. And I think we always want to be very safe and cognizant that we need to talk people through it and have a conversation around it, right?
That's absolutely right. And considering that Alzheimer's disease is maybe 60 or 70% heritable overall, that also means that it's 30 or 40% due to environmental influences.
Right.
And of course, we can't change our genes, at least not yet, but we can change our environment. And that's another reason to learn as much as possible about the disorder in the individual to see if possibly changing their lifestyle may slow the development of, for instance, vascular dementia, which is similar in its clinical symptoms to Alzheimer's disease, but very different in its mechanism.
Right. Can you explain that a little bit? I think it's confusing for people.
Well, what we call vascular dementia is due to atherosclerosis and that kind of vascular problem in the brain, and it leads to little tiny strokes that the patient may not even recognize, but which add up and kill little parts of the brain, a little here and a little there, and eventually it can lead to dementia.
Okay.
Of course, anything having to do with the vasculature is what we worry about with respect to strokes and heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so lowering your cholesterol, lowering your blood pressure, getting some more exercise, all of that is very good for the heart, and it's good for the brain too.
Right. And I think one of the things that we've learned in the past few years is taking care of ourselves, eating well, exercising, having a good regimen of both can help us possibly down the line to stave off this disease. We hope in some small way it might make a difference, right?
It might make a difference. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's good for your health in general. So it's a win-win-win. And we certainly recommend people take care of their health much more than they probably have been during their busy lives.
Right. So we're going to take a short break in just a minute. But when we come back, I'd like to discuss brain donation. When can we do it? How should we do it? Why would we do it? And what kind of brains do you need? Alzheimer's brains, Down syndrome's brains, those kinds of things. We donated my mom's brain to science, and I hope that it's doing some good work out there. But we're going to talk about that and be a little bit more specific so people understand, can they just come in and say, I want to donate my brain to science, and how that all works, okay? So
sure.
We'll be back in just a minute. We'll discuss that.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you'll ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Bellevue Heights believes that supporting families and caregivers is just as important as caring for our residents. We offer free monthly support groups, education and lecture series, and presentations by experts in Alzheimer's and dementia care. All of our programs are free and open to the public. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. And ask about our current and upcoming education opportunities and support groups. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay, thank you to Bellevue Heights, our wonderful sponsor. I'm with Dr. Huntington Potter. Glad to have you back.
I'm glad to be back, Jill.
We always have good discussions, albeit a little out of the norm for people in general, I think. But Dr. Potter, I think I have been asked questions on occasion about donating a loved one's brain. Now, it was important to my family when my mom passed away that we donated her brain to science, but this wasn't something we just decided at the last second. We were in a clinical study out of Washington University at St. Louis. We've had this conversation many times with our caregiver nation, our listeners, and so they know about that. But the process wasn't just snap, snap, snap. We filled out paperwork. My mom was part of the decision-making process. They're studying my family over a lineage, how we're doing over the years, and so on and so forth. So we had it down to a science. For when she died, we had already set up that she'd be put on ice. She had an hour to get them to take her from the nursing home she was in to the hospital that was going to actually take her brain out and study it and send it on to Columbia. My point is that this is a huge process. This isn't a last-minute idea, and it's helpful if it's set up, if you're part of a clinical trial, but we don't just need a lot of people coming and donating their brains. It's a very expensive process, and there needs to be some parameters around it, right?
Yes, absolutely right. And your family is a very special case because they have a genetic interest in this problem.
Correct.
And the scientists would like to correlate the clinical studies with the brain pathology. But mostly, people who die of Alzheimer's disease, their brains are probably more important to them and their family than they are to the science.
Right.
So we appreciate people wanting to make a donation in some way to the study of Alzheimer's disease, but that's better done by volunteering for a clinical study before anywhere death is imminent. And occasionally we get people who are very special for one reason or another, like your family, or for instance, a recent brain donation we received from a person who died with Down syndrome and Alzheimer's disease. And of course, that's something that is of special interest to scientists, and we were very happy that they were generous enough to donate that brain. But in general, we need special cases and a great deal of knowledge of the person's background before it's useful.
So that's a great segue. Thank you for that. You have been doing a lot of research in this area between the correlation of Down syndrome and Alzheimer's.
Correct.
And your Linda Cernick Institute that's in conjunction with your Alzheimer's Research Center has been amazing in bringing forth more information about why are these connected. Can we talk about that for a minute?
Absolutely. In the 1970s, the life expectancy of somebody with Down syndrome was about 10, and now it's about 60.
Wow.
That's a fabulous advance, of course, due to better treatment and better understanding. But what we've discovered in that time is that people with Down syndrome all develop the pathology of Alzheimer's disease in their brain by the time they're 30 or 40 years old, and they usually develop dementia by the time they're 50 or 60. So this is a very special human population with many challenges and many gifts, but one of the challenges is that they're very susceptible to Alzheimer's disease. We know why, and that's because they have three copies of chromosome number 21 instead of two, like all the rest of us have, and the main Alzheimer gene is on chromosome 21, so they have an extra copy, and that means they make extra Alzheimer protein, and that begins to accumulate and eventually gives them Alzheimer's disease.
And so, again, educating our caregiver nation out there, you're only supposed to, of the chromosomes, have one from mom and one from dad, right?
Correct.
So if you have three, that's not good.
That's a number that is dangerous, shall we say.
Right. So have you made any other advancements in this area? And do you need, for example, people that have Down syndrome that are maybe coming through the Linda Cernik Institute? Do we need to study more of their brains? Would that be helpful?
Well, it's very helpful for people with Down syndrome to volunteer for our clinical studies, where we analyze their cognitive function, we follow their blood proteins, and we give them brain scans and generally follow them over a course of time so that we can see whether they're developing any kind of additional problems or not. Mm-hmm. That's tremendously helpful.
Great. And so your clinic out there really is a continuum.
Correct.
And it's the first that we've seen in this area. And you've been there now about 5 years, right?
Correct.
About 5 years. I'm amazed, though, how many people don't understand the process. They just don't understand the process. We do have trial match where people can go on, and they do that through the Alzheimer's Association website, alz.org. If there's another way to do that, I'm not...
Yes, there's a government website called clinicaltrials.gov, G-O-V, and all clinical trials for all disorders are essentially listed on that website, including anything having to do with Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's or, you know, frontal temporal dementia, anything you can find there.
Okay. Let's say that one more time.
Clinicaltrials.gov.
Okay, great. So back to the continuum. Dr. Woodcock and his group, a team of doctors there, really do act as a team. Folks can come in already with a diagnosis, or they could come out there and maybe make an appointment. And it takes a while. You're busy out there, right? Let's call in advance and try and get an appointment. But if it works and they've gone through the trial match or they've gone to the clinicaltrials.gov and unfortunately or fortunately everything fits, then they could start through your research if all the pieces fit together of the puzzle?
If they volunteer, we have a number of research studies at the Memory Disorders Clinic. Some of them are observational, where we follow people, like I mentioned, for people with Down syndrome. Some of them are interventional, that is to say they may receive a drug either developed here called Leukine or developed by a pharmaceutical company. So they can participate in a number of different ways. It's no guarantee that they'll qualify. We have to be very careful when we're studying people with a new drug for Alzheimer's disease, that it's going to be safe, they don't have another problem that might be exacerbated, and that they sort of have pure Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
Because if they have something mixed, then we may be confused.
Oh, absolutely. And that is incredibly important. Even, again, and you know this, we've had many conversations with my mom. I would bet my life that my mom had Alzheimer's. She presented exactly like she had Alzheimer's, but it just really clarifies that statement you just made, that when we did get her autopsy back after her brain study, we were surprised to find that she had the tau protein, not a single plaque or tangle in her brain, and her disease was called hippocampal sclerosis. Although it presented exactly like Alzheimer's, it's no wonder we've had a hard time finding a cure when there are so many diseases like Lewy body and so forth that sort of mimic Alzheimer's. I can't even imagine everything you would need to know to understand these things, right?
That's right. It can be very confusing. And I have to say that one of the advances that has helped tremendously in our understanding of the mechanism of the disorders, whether it be Lewy body, frontal temporal dementia, dementia, you know, hippocampal sclerosis, are the animals that have been made that get these disorders in the laboratory. So, for instance, mice normally don't get Alzheimer's disease, but if we take a gene out of a family's blood cells that has a very rare inherited form of Alzheimer's disease, we can put that gene into the mouse, and now the mouse gets Alzheimer's disease, and we can test our new drugs in the mouse, which is a tremendous help.
Okay. Well, when we come back, I want to talk about your leukine trial just a little bit and the advancements you're making and see if we can't get people to get on board and help you with this, okay?
Great. Thanks.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. Licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Okay. Dr. Potter, so glad to have you here today. University of Colorado Hospital, Alzheimer's Research, you're doing out there fabulous, and you're the director of the Alzheimer's Research and Memories Disorder Clinic.
Correct, Jill, and I'm very glad to be here with you.
Yes, I am too. So we have a lot to talk about your leukine trial. And what's going on with your leukine trial? And you made some great advancements this year. I saw a couple of your folks on 9 News. Coach McCartney, looking great.
Right.
So do you have any news to share with us? How's the clinical trial going?
Well, perhaps I should remind your listeners where it started, in the sense that leukine is a normal human protein, which we discovered because of our interest in the fact that rheumatoid arthritis seems to protect people from Alzheimer's disease. And this protein called leukine goes up in people with rheumatoid arthritis. So we tested it first in the mice, and now we're in a clinical trial, as you indicated.
Right.
So the clinical trial is ongoing at the University of Colorado. We've seen 30 subjects. Half of them got leukine, half of them didn't.
Okay.
And so far, it's been safe, which is a big, big step forward.
Huge,
because almost all Alzheimer's drugs seem to cause side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the side effects are so bad that they have to stop the trial.
Right.
Or they may be bad, but not so bad as to stop the trial. But so far, leukine has had no serious side effects.
Okay.
So that's the first step.
That's huge.
The second step is that we are beginning to see some indication of improvement in some of the measures of memory that we give to the subjects.
Okay.
Now, this is too early to get very, very excited about it, but at least they're not getting worse, and we may see a hint that they be getting better. So the next step, of course, is to extend the trial from 3 weeks, which is what the trial is now, to 6 months, which is what our plan is.
Okay. So can we just back up for a second and be a little bit more specific? When they first joined the trial, and I'm just going to guess, so you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, but you probably did a PET scan and maybe a neurobehavioral exam so you could assess where the person was in the progression of the disease before they started.
That's correct,
and then,
we can only take people who are in the mild to moderate level.
Okay, and so what you're saying is then after the first couple of weeks, you had 3 weeks of them maybe getting the initial processes of the leukine mixture?
There would be 3 weeks of treatment after the initial assessment, and half the people would get a placebo instead.
Right.
So we have to compare the people who got the leukine to the people who didn't, and the data so far are hinting at an improvement in the people who got the leukine.
And so you could figure that out by maybe going back and doing the PET scans again and neurobehavioral exams again to see how they improved?
That's correct. We don't yet know the data from the PET scans, as you mentioned, which can actually measure amyloid in the brain in a living person.
Okay.
We're doing that now with the group of subjects that we're studying, but we don't know the answer yet.
Okay. I had another question from a listener. Maybe you could clarify this. Correct me if I'm wrong. An MRI cannot show beta amyloid.
Correct.
Okay, it can only assess the density of the brain?
Yes, it is a very good way of measuring whether the brain has become smaller, has become shrunken, which is a very clear characteristic of a number of neurodegenerative diseases. So an MRI can't tell the difference between Alzheimer's and frontal temporal dementia very easily.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the PET scan is helpful.
Okay. And they're very expensive, and insurance companies don't necessarily want to pay for them right now. So we're not going to advise that people go out and get a PET scan or try to have anything like that right now, are we? We're just going to maybe do some mini mental status exams and so on and so forth, and just kind of assess where people are.
Correct.
Yeah.
But if they volunteer and are accepted into a clinical study at the Rocky Mountain Alzheimer's Disease Center, then they would automatically get a PET scan. And I'll give you one example.
Yes.
The question about whether these PET scans measuring amyloid are helpful or not is being studied at our clinic and at a number of clinics around the country, and funded by the drug company and the Medicare system, because they want to find out whether knowing the amyloid level in the brain is helpful to the clinician, whether it reduces, for instance, the use of the emergency room and other clinical problems. Does it really save money? And that study is ongoing, and of course, that would be very helpful to volunteer for if the person qualifies.
Well, that just underscores why it's so important to be part of the process of trying to figure this out, instead of just being a bystander that's standing by saying, oh, I wish that we could find a cure. Get involved, people. Get in these trials. Sign up. Be a part of the progress of discovering the cure.
You're absolutely right. Scientists love to collaborate with other scientists, but we also have to collaborate with our mice in the laboratory and with subjects who volunteer for research. Without those collaborators, it's a team sport, so to speak, will never get a cure for Alzheimer's.
Oh, so true. And I love all the work you're doing out there. But part of your challenge is that you need money for this research.
That's absolutely
right. It doesn't grow on trees. People can get involved. I had the lieutenant governor on a couple of weeks ago, and I thanked her for the money that the state of Colorado gives you, and challenged her to give you more.
Well, thank you.
And because I want to make sure you have money. But you could use some donations as well. So people, please, if you're planning your estate planning, if you want to give a donation, as a matter of fact, Dr. Potter's Camp put a wonderful bundle on my website recently. I've talked and talked about the bundles of information I just loaded on my website and launched on Sunday the 15th. But there is a piece there about research, and Carrie Radent Flynn gave us some information on how they can give money to you. Okay.
Right. I really appreciate it.
There's
that.
A live link on there, folks. Please go on my website, summitresiliencetraining.com. Look under the research tab on the new bundles I've just loaded, and you can find all the information about how you can get involved in the clinical trials. But you have to sign up. You have to volunteer. You need to have mild cognitive impairment. We've kind of made that clear this morning, if you want to be a part of this. So you folks know who you are. Please, please, please give to this. It's important. We need to find a cure.
Thanks, Jill.
Yeah. So any parting words? Anything you want to tell our caregiver nation that we didn't cover?
Well, I think the main thing is to be optimistic. We know so much more about these disorders than even 5 years ago, and that knowledge is really helping us develop new treatments in the laboratory. So we have bench strength. Leukine is the flower, but we got a lot of other roses coming up, and we hope that some of them will help the patients.
Well, I'm really excited about everything you're doing, and you are always welcome back to give us updates and to let us know how everything's going in your research trials. And people, we're not going to get there without your help. You've got to help us. We've all got to be that village and try to help you get to the finish line, right?
Right. Thanks
very
much.
We know there's no silver bullet, but you're making some great strides. I'm real proud of all of you out there. And thank you for coming on my show and talking to my listeners. And again, summitresiliencetraining.com. Click on bundles. You'll find the information about the research, and I'm going to add the piece about the clinicaltrial.gov because I don't have that on there. So have a great Sunday, everybody. We'll see you next week, and thank you, Dr. Potter, for being on my show.
It's always a pleasure.
Have a great day.
You too.
You've been listening to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Visit her website at summitresiliencetraining.com to learn more and join us next week as we learn more about dementia, Alzheimer's, and overcoming obstacles with a positive outcome. See you next time.